bars, you were just going to bars, right?
In my teens, I didn't go to bars at all.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I must not have heard right. Well, I thought you were saying...
It came out when I was in service when I was 19.
Right.
When I did go to bars with my friends, I didn't drink, and I went to non-gay bars.
So
when I went to school with...
So when she said she didn't know how people stayed on bars... When
she
you
used
say,
to spend a lot of times in the bars. She was a very promiscuous woman.
But when she said that to you, that means you were already in your 20s, right?
Yeah.
I was confused. 30s. Well, you were in your 30s when she said that to that. So you all had conflict for a long time.
Yeah, we always had conflict. Huh. The psychologist here at the Buffalo VA Hospital told me one time that my mother was jealous of me. That she was jealous that I had a profession. She was jealous of my independence, and she was jealous that I could take care of myself.
Do you think that she encouraged that in you or not? Like, where
did
you...
One of her expressions used to be, you got yourself into it, so you get yourself out of it. In other words, so you learn how to handle yourself.
So she was ambivalent about it, huh? Okay. Let's see, can you think of anything... when you look back and think about yourself being gay, do you think of any family members who were gay?
No.
No, you didn't know anybody in your family who was gay or anything.
I know one time I was up in Toronto, after I'd had a few beers, I called my father and told him, and he said, well, tell me something I don't know. But that's because of the life he lived when he was younger. My mother said he used to be trade for the gay men years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And that when I was a baby, he stood over my crib and said he hoped that I would be a lesbian when I grew up.
Is that right? Why did he say that?
Some kind of argument that they must have been having.
Oh, my goodness.
Huh. Yeah, she told me these things later on in years.
When you first told your mother that you were gay, how did she...
I didn't tell her.
She just figured it out.
An irate lover of mine called up. And I went out the door flying, you know, it was one of her tantrums. That's when I went off to live with Pauline. And the ironic part about it was that she had a gay friend when she was in her young 20s, a man that traveled with her and her group of friends who any of the old-timers of Buffalo would remember him. His name was Tangara. He was a female impersonator. But when it comes to one of your own, that's another story. Like I tell people when I counsel them, and it's because I've learned this with my own experience. Well, your family's going to go through these type of stages. First of all, they're going to be angry. And then they're going to be angry, your parents are going to be angry at themselves because they're going to say, where have they gone wrong? And then they're going to resolve that they haven't gone wrong. They brought their kid up right. And then they're going to say, well, where did you go wrong? Mm-hmm. And then they're going to resolve, well, no kid of mine could go wrong. It's those friends of yours. Mm-hmm. If you didn't have those friends of yours, that's the way you wouldn't be the way you are. Because I used to hear that all the time. And it's true. It's you know, it never changes. That's exactly what people go through when they tell their family.
And does your mother still think like that?
No. In fact, since I've been in the ministry, and since I quit drinking, my mother has been more supportive of me than she's ever been in my life.
Huh.
And of course, now that my brother has passed away, I'm all she's got, so she doesn't have much choice. She has to love me.
What did your brother die from so young?
He died of an irreversible lung disease. He and I don't have the same father. He did not know that. And his father died of the same thing. It was a hereditary. He came to Arizona. He had a business in Buffalo. He did very well. And he finally sold his business, not happy about it, and came to see if he would like Arizona because it's better for people with lung disease. He was there 3 days, and he ended up in the hospital and died there.
That must have been a terrible
experience. My mother was one bitch to get along with. What happened was her tying herself so close to him, it backfired on her because when he went.
She was alone.
Yeah. But she's, you know, she's really done a change about it. My brother left her fairly comfortable with some money, and Gina and I, she gave us $300 toward our trip to come here. You know, under that Christmas tree, there was many, many gifts, and Jean got just as much as I got.
Did your mother work as a clerical in Westinghouse or on the line?
On the line.
On the line. And did she do that work all the time?
No, she worked all her life. You stop and think about it, one of the reasons she was so bitter, she brought my brother and I up during Depression years. Even during the Depression years, she worked for the WPA. She worked at anything she could work at to make a living. And then as the war came along, she was able to better herself. She got into industry. First was Curtis Wright. And then she worked as a waitress in a bar she held out on weekends. That's one reason she wasn't home very much. Then Years later, she went to Westinghouse, and that's where she retired from.
Hmm. And did she do any kind of active work? I'm thinking because you've become such a strong person on your own in terms of helping gay people. Like, did she do any kind of active work, like in unions and things that would be a model for you?
No.
She wasn't active at all like that.
My mother has always been an extremely critical person of other people.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely critical. And I would also say she was never really let people get close to her.
Mm-hmm.
She never got involved with other people or had friends like she does now. She sold her home a year ago last November, and she moved in this apartment house in Amherst, which is not a senior citizen's residence, but there's a lot of senior citizens
mm-hmm.
in there. And they play bingo and cards and go on trips and so forth. And she's really involved with these people. You know, one time if I called home and was when she wasn't working and I didn't get an answer, I would panic. I would wonder where she was. Now I'm very apt to call and get no answer, or I'm just on my way out the door. And I think that this has helped her in the basis of that she's got to deal with other people, so she can't be so quick with her mouth.
Right.
To be so critical. Even though she's still critical, she's not as... She works at getting along with people more. And I think my brother's death, you know, had a lot to do with this. I always felt that... Like I used to say, I'm my father's daughter, and that's my problem. I represented my father, who she really ended up hating.
Huh, because he left
her? Yeah, and apparently she loved the man that was the father of my brother.
Huh. Do you...
No,
do
not
you,
because he left her. No, that wasn't it. It was just a bad relationship.
And you were a product of it.
Yeah.
Huh. Did you ever get to know your father?
Yeah, enough to know that that's why I'm not close to him.
Because...
Yeah, he made sexual advances to me when I was a teenager. Made them to my brother when he was six.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, he was, and a very nasty, mean alcoholic. Now the non-gay person say, oh, that's why you're gay. That's why you're gay.
There'd be more
you
gay
come
people
from the dominant home of the dominant mother, and you come from a broken home, and that's why you hate men, and I don't hate men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just had to throw that in because that's exactly what I would get immediately.
Right, that's true. That's one of the reasons why we don't start asking family questions, because we don't want to, because the dominant, the non-gay person always deduces that's why you're gay, and that's not really why we're asking these questions. We're really kind of trying to get a sense of where a person comes from after you have all these...
One of the things that Troy says in his record, and he says, now, you know, I'm only kidding. He said, you know, you could say that Jesus Christ was gay. He had a dominant mother. He traveled around with 12 guys all the time, and he was betrayed by a kiss on the cheek by a man.
Right. Speaking of why somebody's gay, do you ever think about why you're gay, and what's your theory about
I think
that?
You're born that way.
You think you're born that way?
I do.
Way.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. And... Do you think the fact that... Well, first of all, do you think that the women's movement has made it that more women come out?
Yeah, that's why what I was talking to you about in the beginning when I said about what would I say in a book.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the lesbians being out and more upfront,
mm-hmm.
people are becoming more comfortable. They don't have to go into... They feel like dark shadows and mate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, finding out that people don't treat us like we have 3 heads and 15 arms or that we're just sexual objects. My real coming out, probably in my life, was in Tucson after the human rights rally. I was going to Pima Community College, and I became aware that I had gotten caught up in a life of where I associated with nothing but gay people. So, of course, I was very comfortable with my gayness. And in a sociology class, when they were broken up into groups to work on a project, and somehow one of the gay bars in Tucson came up,
mm-hmm.
and the people were talking very freely. They didn't say queer, though. You don't hear people using that word so much anymore. And I all of a sudden realized that I was a minority and that they didn't think I was gay. So
huh.
that human rights rally made me so angry that I went back to all my classes and said, and nobody reacted. I was totally shocked.
So and you view that as your real coming out, huh?
Yeah. I was in a real minority situation. And I was frightened. But the sociology teacher was kind of cool. And I told her that day, I said, you know, the human rights rally is coming up, and I talked about it. And she said, oh, yeah, she was very pro-gay and non-gay. And I said, the reason I'm telling you is I've been told that I may be on television because I've got to tell you where I'm coming from. Because they told me to expect it. In fact, I missed when I was supposed to be over for an interview. That's the only reason I wasn't. Well, I was on in spots. And I said, in case somebody says something in class, if I speak up, would you stand behind me? Will you support me? And she reassured me that she would support me if it got out of hand.
This was the human rights rally in October of this year, or
no, when Anita Bryant
came. Oh, the Anita Bryant thing that you were telling me.
The fundamentalists did such a workup number on me that I was very angry that I had to keep my feelings in. Mm-hmm. And then when I went into my writing class and the teacher, we had a pamphlet that we handed out. Part of it came from MCC, and then the Gay Coalition had myths on it. I'll tell you why it came from MCC. There's a pamphlet that we used to use for our calling cards, and it says, what did Jesus say about homosexuality? And you open it up, and there's nothing in there. And you turn it over, and it says, that's right, absolutely nothing. So the writing teacher, who was an Oriental, stood up and was holding this in front of the class, and I'm just sitting there like this. I wanted to sit back and hear what she had to say, and she didn't say too much. I said, where'd you get that? And then she said, from one of her drama students. And I said, what are your feelings about this? And she said that her drama student said that the one that gave it to her, that she liked to go over Anita Bryant's house and drop a case of orange juice on her. And I said, well, I want to tell you why I'm asking. And I found out there wasn't that much reaction. Those who might have had adverse feelings didn't show it. Nobody treated me any different. So I was taking speech, and we had to, at the end of the semester, we had to do a controversial speech, which was heckling, a heckling speech. And ended up, besides the instructor, I was the only woman in the class. And I thought, for my own experience and for an education in this class, my speech was homosexuals in the Bible. It was well received. I hardly got heckled.
You hardly got heckled at all.
And I did it to condition myself for a situation like that. So it was a real growing experience for me. Because it wasn't until I went to school that I realized, in the school, that I was the real minority. You know, particularly being a woman, minister, gay.
Right, and up till that, you're always surrounded by a circle of gay friends, so that it wasn't...
Outside of school, yeah, because being pastor of the church, that's where my life revolved around. Mm-hmm.
You had finished high school before you joined the Army,
no,
right?
I didn't. I took a GED test, that's how I got in. General Education Development.
Why didn't you finish high school?
I was behind in school. I was a first grade dropout.
Is that right?
I skipped school so much and they didn't catch me. My mother wasn't working, so I failed first grade. I was con artist when I was in first grade. And then I was put back in third grade when I had a lot of ear problems and I had to go to the clinic a lot. And so I was set back. So I was in my junior year when I was 18. And I decided I wanted to join the Army when I was 18. And I took the test then and I passed it. Mm-hmm. And because they wouldn't take me because I was overweight. I've always been on the stocky side. And I just kept hounding and hounding the recruiting officer. They gave me a weight waiver. And all of a sudden it dawned on me one day, what am I going to school for? I'm going to get a high school diploma. So then I quit. And then it was all pretty close to about a year later I went to service.
So you took a high school equivalency test. Mm-hmm. And why do you think you didn't like school?
It bored me.
And so then the first time you went back to formal education was at community college in mm-hmm. Arizona? Okay. And have you finished there now?
No, because I didn't take any particular course of study. I had a following program. I took courses that I thought were important
that you wanted to have.
Huh? I had to drop out this last semester, the one previous to this, because I've hurt my shoulder and I've got tendonitis. I can't raise this arm. Mm-hmm. And I had to go to treatments, and that got me. And then a year ago in December, I had major surgery. And I got two incompletes. One of them I took care of in humanities. I took the final in that. The other I had to write a paper, and I kept putting it off. I haven't done it yet. So mm-hmm. I'll lose out on that. But I got A's in my classes, believe it or not. I've always said I bullshit my way through life. But I have a doctor's degree in the School of Hard Knocks.
When you were in the...
And not anymore, I can't bullshit my way.
No, not as a pastor, I'm sure you can't.
But one of the reasons that I have problems with some of the people, and the reason I have problems with them is they can't manipulate me.
Because you know all about the tricks.
Because
mm-hmm, right?
I've been on the streets in Buffalo.
Yeah, I'm sure that, because I... And you were on the streets young then, if you mm-hmm. were skipping school and mm-hmm. things like that.
And particularly when a man can't manipulate me.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he's a gay man or not. This is when I bump heads and I get into some problems because I just will not, can't be manipulated.
When you were in the streets in Buffalo, were you kind of like a tomboy?
That's
how people looked at you, and you learned how to fight or not?
No, I didn't fight.
You didn't fight, just
there was too much violence at home. Even to this day, when people speak loud, it bothers me. Mm-hmm. My mother's hard of hearing, it, and it took a long time to get adjusted to speaking in a loud voice to her, because speaking in a loud voice represented arguing and fighting.
You know, I jumped around. How it got on to you being in Tucson was I asked, you said that you thought people were born gay.
Yeah, you asked me what
right,
I think. No, you asked me about myself. I can't say that about other people.
Oh, okay. Qualified. You think you were born gay. Yeah, and what do you think about other people?
I don't feel qualified to say it. You know, only I can only speak for myself, that I feel that this is the way I was meant to be. That was it.
And did you ever feel guilt? Wait, I want to ask you, were you raised Irish Catholic?
No. My religious affiliation when I was a child was only my own choosing.
It was your own?
Yeah, because my mother was Protestant, my father was Catholic, and I was baptized Catholic, and my mother was not one who went to church a lot. I would say that I was basically unchurched, even though I did attend church from time to time when I was a kid. I went to Catholic church with my grandmother. And when I lived on the east side, most of my friends were Catholic.
I was going to ask you whether you ever felt guilty when you became gay.
No,
and
I didn't.
Stuff. You
never I never had any conflict over that.
When you you mentioned it once.
That's why I asked you the other night. I'm always interested to hear what people's replies. Remember I asked you if
I ever felt guilty.
Yeah, I never felt any guilt. When I said that in the group therapy about not having guilt feelings about being gay, I meant that.
And it was more that you just felt that this is who you were, and that's how you
felt
about it.
Yeah, I felt comfortable about it.
When you were in the 50s, did you ever think of what your life would be like in the future, and did it ever scare you that you'd be alone? Or?
No, not in the 50s. I kind of smiled, because if anybody would have told me that I would be doing what I'm doing, I'd have told them they're crazy and hell. Go see your shrink, because that was the most remote thing from my mind. The only time that I've become aware of the loneliness and age, basically, I try not to think about it because I could dwell on it very easily since my brother's death. Because of other than a couple of aunts and some cousins, but the only really close living relative that I consider that I have is my mother. As much as sometimes some people would like to think that their relationship with their mate will last forever, in dealing with reality, we don't know if it will. Having worked in convalescent hospitals, I have always had the fear that I might end up very lonely in one of those places.
How about most of the aging lesbians that you know? Is it your impression that most of them ended up lonely and aged alone, or what happened to them?
Liz, that's difficult for me to answer, not being in Buffalo all the time. Because I'm sure there's people I didn't think of to be able to ask about, and there's some that I've thought about that I haven't. That people didn't know what they were doing that I've asked about. So it's really kind of a hard answer. I think, but it goes back to being, as I always say, gay before it was stylish, that I can't help but think that there's probably people that are very alone because they're not into being active like we are now and having reaches, outreach and so forth. Like myself, being in a position of pastoring a church, my chances of being as lonely might not be like others. You know, as long as I stay with that profession, the professional ministry. And who knows, next year, I say I will. But it gets rough. It's a lot of pressure. You got to take a lot of crap from people. I had problems just before I left. They started, one individual doesn't like the way I preach, and they make a big thing out of it. And, it happens so many times, you just say, oh, shit, I'm tired of this.
Do you have any friends you said that for a while you wrote with Mary, but have you maintained any friends?
One friend who happens to live in Scottsdale, Arizona, which is outside of Phoenix. And even as close as we are, within miles and living situation, we see each other maybe twice a year. In fact, I'm going to be very delighted, and she'll be elated when I go back and tell her I've finally seen a lot of people we knew, and I'll be able to share with her, because she'll say to me, when you come back to Buffalo, have you been to the bars? Have you seen this one? Have you seen that one? And I ask her the same. Kind of still cling to that past.
But you knew her from Buffalo.
Yeah. In fact, when I went to California, when I went to the West Coast the first time, I went. She was in the same car that I was in. She went to Phoenix and we went on to California, myself and some other friends.
So
we maintained friendship. I always have had kept in touch, you know, as far as mail or before I came to Arizona.
And do you all ever think of if you should get older to living together and keeping...
No, we've never talked about that. Betty had been married at one time. She got a daughter and grandchildren, uh-huh. So that's something for her to cling on to.
Because that seems to... Do you remember any older women when you were out here in the 50s and how what their lives were like? And did you
think... I don't think we thought about
You never thought these things. About it.
You don't. You know, you're young, so you don't think you're going to get older.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I could tell when Mary was telling me it was her 50th birthday, so that bothered her. Mm-hmm. And I'm 49, I'll be 50 in September, and I haven't thought about it bothering me. It seems to me that when most people go through a trauma, and when they get older, it's that 30-year syndrome. You know, oh my God, I'm 30 years old. I don't remember that. But I do, as I look back, I think the birthday that bothered me the most was my 39th, and I wasn't aware of it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But about 6 months later, I became aware, because that meant I wasn't going to be in my 30s anymore. Mm-hmm. No, pardon me, my 40. Yeah, 39, because right. I was going to be 40 next year. And this last year, a little tinge bothered me, because I'm getting closer to 50. And it's basically the fear of what's going to happen when I get old. But I'm hoping, and I really am praying, that MCC fulfills one of the things that they're doing. They're looking at this. What does the older gay do? You know, how about some retirement centers or convalescent hospitals, whatever, for the gay person,
mm-hmm.
so that they will be around people who understand their feelings? They've been taking, you know, this is one thing that MCC takes a look at all these things.
Mm-hmm.
Like Troy Perry is one of the biggest feminists that you would ever meet.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets very upset with other people when they're met.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our leaders in our, you know, are. Of course, you have your individuals around the country who just won't change. They won't open their ears long enough to change. And all these things are looked upon, and you know, studies are being done, and they're talked about.
Did you ever want to be a mother?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I used to say when I was younger, I wanted to get married young and have my children, grow up with my children.
But once you became recognized you were queer, as you used to say.
Still wanted to be a mother.
You still wanted to be a mother.
Or at least have a child to raise. I think that's why I was so happy in the job working with the boys.
Mm-hmm.
They were
mm-hmm.
my kids for 2 years. Yeah, I've always loved children. Now I thank God, because I don't know, you know, how I'd handle it in this day and age with the way things are going.
What do you mean?
Well, with the drugs and the way kids are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, when TV first came out and your little kids say, whoa, what did you do before you had TV?
Right.
So my brother and I used to fight over who was going to read the comic books first, and we were content and happy.
Did you ever go with a woman who had kids?
No.
Were there any women in your set of friends, a circle of friends here in Buffalo, who had kids?
Not many. Mary Thomas was, I think, the first I knew. No.
Otherwise...
Oh, wait, yeah, Pauline had kids. I'm not talking about it. They stayed with her mother-in-law.
So oh, so she didn't have them with you.
Yes, I didn't. I always loved kids.
Mm. So was that a hard thing for you to come to terms with that you weren't?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I got married. I married this gay man because I wanted to have one child.
Oh, yeah.
But then after that, it was supposed to be over a marriage convenience. The marriage was never consummated. He couldn't follow through and I couldn't follow through. But it ended up being a bummer trip beyond that. But that was one of the basic reasons.
Huh. You married him in California in
1963.
And that's right, I didn't even ask you about that, because you had mentioned you got
I've always been a very trusting person, and I met him where I worked, and mm-hmm. I believed his big line of BS, which ended up being a lot of lies.
Hmm.
He thought that he had married somebody that was going to support him.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't aware he was an alcoholic at the time. I got so tired of seeing him drinking that I took all the booze and hid it in the closet.
And you two lived together for a while?
For a very short time. Very short time.
And during that period, did you have a lover as well?
Gordy and I were off and on again during that period.
At that period, huh? And did you...
That marriage devastated her, though. I didn't realize it did. Really devastated her.
Huh. Why do you think that was?
Because she still loved me.
Hmm. But you had already kind of gotten over your love for her at that period?
I can't... And, you know, we were back and forth. I think it became a habit. On my part. And I could always turn to her when things got rough.
Do you ever see Gordy now?
No.
Do you ever
write?
The last
time I saw her was in 1969. And I remember her words when she saw me then. She said, I want to tell you something I wanted to tell you for years. We were in Buffalo. People used to always say, Buff, if you ever break up with Gordy, I'd sure like to go with her. I'd say, I'll tie a red ribbon around her. You can have her. And I meant it in jest. She told me that one of my faults was that I never showed any jealousy. She said she got tired of me giving her away with a red ribbon tied on her. All those years, she never said anything.
Huh.
Because we weren't together at the time. She was going with somebody else, and I went back to California.
That was in, when did you see her? When she said
1969.
And she had come back to Buffalo?
No, in California.
In California.
I had come back to Buffalo. I was in Massachusetts for a while, and then I went back to California.
Huh.
We corresponded quite a while after I came back, up to a point. And then she started going with this woman who was extremely jealous of her that wouldn't let her write to me. And then she wrote to me from work for a while because we ended up becoming friends. No, after that I didn't see her hardly ever.
So actually, I guess I should know just a little bit, although it's not about Buffalo, but it's still interesting to learn about gay life. When you were out in, let's see, did you break up with Gordy by 65? You were finished.
Yeah, we were living together, but we weren't really into that much of a relationship.
Hmm.
It just more or less, it was after I got out of the hospital. You know, I was in pretty bad shape.
Hmm. And it was
that's when she started going with somebody else. That was the first time.
And you felt that your going into the hospital had to do with that marriage and also the breaking up with Gordy?
No, no, it was a different woman.
It was a different woman.
Like I said, we were back and forth. For a
I see, in and out.
Like a rubber ball.
Oh, did you have a long-term lover after Gordy before Jean?
Yeah, I had a lover for about 3.5 years.
In California?
A woman I met in Massachusetts, and she went to California with me.
Hmm.
And then I lived alone for 2.5 years when I met Jean, swearing I would never get involved again.
Why'd you swear that?
Because of bitterness, you know. I just felt that I was tired of breaking up relationships. Jean and I met on the neuropsychiatric ward of the VA hospital. And I forget the first time I met her, she was sitting out in the hall and she was stoned on grass and waiting to be admitted. And, wow, man, I'm really stoned. And it was one of the times I was in my depressed states. I'd been there for quite a while. And I had my MCC cross on, and she had one on, and we started talking. And I thought she was just a nice sister that needed a ride to church and didn't know that she was in love with me. That was almost 6 years ago. And she had a lot of frequent hospitalizations even for a while after that, because the first 13 months we were together, once a month I could count on her. She was a runner. She was now a controlled manic depressive. And she wasn't then, and I didn't know it was because of the manic depressive. She'd leave, and I'd look at her, just say something, and it went wrong. And she, 2-3 days later, I'd get a phone call, and she'd say, can I come home? And I'd say, why not? And we got into some physical fights when we were both drinking, so neither one of us drank. She has a psychological addiction to marijuana, too, which she get absolutely bizarre behind it. So as I say, I haven't had a drink in 4.5 years, and she hasn't had any grass or alcohol in 4.5 years.
Phew. Is that the church that kind of is the support group for you all to keep?
Uh-huh. Particularly in my position, I have to have somebody with me who is a spiritual. In fact, Jean is probably more spiritual than I am. And she's really supportive. You know, when you're a minister, you have to have somebody who's very supportive and a lot of patience, a lot of understanding. She has grown in the ministry with me. And this is why we have succeeded. A lot of ministers' relationships don't last if they meet people after they've been, because they don't understand how you can't give them their full attention all the time. So,
So you said that you got into the church in 72, is that correct? So that essentially you're in California from 65 to 72 and with kind of...
No, I was in California from 1962 to about 66, and then I came back east, and I was back east for about a year and a half. I think I was back there in 67 or 68, latter part of 67, 68. And then I've been out there all the time, except for when I went to Arizona to work with the church, which was 3 years ago last October.
Leo, can you think of anything else that would be important
my
to
mind
talk
is
about?
Very boggled.
Right, mine's a little boggled,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I'm having difficulty in thinking.
Right. I know, because I can tell my mind's going because I remember some of the. I don't remember some things he said, so I can't do. I wonder. Let me take a look and make sure.
More lesbians have come out and come forth because they find out that they don't have three heads, that they're not that all that different.
Mm-hmm.
I think by the women's movement has made the lesbian more visible in the community. For those who have an open enough mind. But it goes back to me saying about, you know, it disturbs me how many people think that bars are the only thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Lesbians are more visible than they were years ago, other than the bars.
Right. I think I'm too tired to ask any more questions. And I'm sure you're too tired to ask. This is the end of the interview with Bob, December 27, 1979.